The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to kuci.org.
You're listening to KUCI 88.9 in Irvine.
Welcome to In the Garden with Master Gardeners. I am Katrina Kirkaby, and I'm here with Tina Spindler, and we are UC Master Gardeners. And today in our show, In the Garden, we're going to be talking about what's happening in January in our garden. Now, when I think of January in the garden, I don't think about a lot of stuff. But today we're going to talk about what we can do in our gardens in January, because surprisingly, there's more than what we thought about. So Tina, what are you doing in your garden?
Well, I'm first of all glad to have a chance to get back out in the garden, because I don't know about you, but over the holidays, there's too many other things that grab our attention, and I don't get out in the garden a whole lot in December. So I'm first of all really excited to be able to get back out there. And second of all, it's one of the busiest months for me, but that may be because I have about 80 plus rose bushes. Do you have a lot of roses in your garden?
No, I don't.
Well, as you do know, though, as a University of California Master Gardener, January is the time to prune your roses if you have rose bushes, and also the time to plant bare root rose bushes if you want to add roses to your garden. And I hope our listeners will tune in to the second half of the show, because we have an awesome guest, Gary Matsuoka from Laguna Hills Nursery. And he's going to talk to us all about planting from bare root for not just roses, but fruit trees and other fruit plants as well. But anyway, what I'm going to be doing, though, right after the show and probably for the rest of the month, is getting my roses pruned.
Now, if I was everybody out there, I would be listening to Tina, because I have seen Tina's roses and they are stunning. And they are stunning almost all the time. Tina, what do you do to make them so beautiful?
Well, I'll tell you what. It's the time that you invest in pruning and actually spraying your roses with dormant spray this time of year helps you to alleviate a lot of the problems that people typically have during the year with roses. If you have roses, you're probably plagued with powdery mildew, maybe some black spot, maybe some rust. Those are all fungal diseases that come visit our roses, especially in those foggy, overcast months, you know?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I think we have a lot to talk about today, Tina.
Yeah, we do. So if you do a little work now in January, then you'll have fewer problems when the May gray and the June gloom hit, when the fungal diseases love that damp weather. And so if we do a little bit now, in the garden, we end up having less problems.
Well, Tina, where do we start with our roses?
So the first thing to do is to prune your roses. And I know people get really nervous when you talk about pruning. And I know I got really nervous when I first started gardening, because you get those sharp clippers in your hands and you feel like you're a surgeon. And if you've never done this before, you're afraid you're going to make a wrong cut and kill the patient, right? So
exactly.
And so
rather intimidating.
it is. But the first thing to tell yourself is just calm down. This is not a patient. It's not a live person. It is a living plant. But honestly, you can make wrong pruning cuts, but it's not going to kill your plant. It's absolutely not going to kill your plant. So the first thing to do is to relax. And then let's talk about it step by step.
Wonderful.
Okay, so first thing you want to do is you need to get a hand pruner, and you need to make sure that it's sharp. There are some real easy little handheld sharpening tools you can use, because you want to be able to have nice, sharp cuts. Because if you have kind of squishy cuts that have damaged that branch that you're cutting, then that's leaving a big open wound for bacteria get in.
So what you're saying is you really don't want to shred the branch. You want a crisp, clean cut to the
exactly.
branch.
Exactly. So sharpen your hand pruner. And the bypass hand pruners are make a better, cleaner cut, I think, than the anvil type pruners. And if you're not sure what those are, since this is radio and I can't show you, visit a nursery and you can ask them. But if you have a bypass hand pruner that is nice and sharp, that's absolutely what you want to use. I also mix a little bit of Lysol in a spray bottle, or you can just buy a, you know, a can of spray Lysol disinfectant, or you can use a, you know, one part bleach to 10 parts water kind of solution in a spray bottle. Just be careful you don't get that on your clothes so you don't bleach your clothes. But the reason that I have that handy is when I move from bush to bush, I like to just spray the hand pruners real quickly so that if there were any diseases on a bush that I was pruning, I'm not transmitting them to another bush. So the second thing is, in addition to being sharp, you want your tools to be clean. And then as you move between bushes, give them a little spray.
So do you clean them off after you spray, or do you just spray it and go?
I just spray it, and then I have a little rag, you know, that I just, you know, wipe it up. If your pruners haven't been used in a while, you might also want to get out a can of WD-40 and spray, you know, the hand pruner joints so that it moves easily and isn't stuck and rusty, perhaps, which your tools can tend to get if you haven't used them for a while.
And especially if you leave them outside and it might have rained in December.
Yeah, don't even talk to my husband about leaving tools outside. I think one of these days is going to hide them all from me since I am forever leaving them outside. But anyway, back to pruning. So now that our tools are ready, we go walk up to our bush, and these instructions will be for shrub roses, not climbing roses. There's a different technique for pruning climbing roses. But for the shrub roses, take a look at it. What you're going to see is you're probably going to see canes, those are the little branches, growing in a lot of different directions. Some are going to be growing towards the outside of the bush. Some are going to be growing to the inside of the bush. There'll be thin ones. There'll be thick ones. You know, what does a rose bush look like in December? It's kind of a big jumble.
Right.
So the first thing that I do, step number one, is I focus on the inside of the bush. And I just cut out any cane that is growing towards the center. So any cane that is pointing towards the middle of the bush, I follow that cane down to where it either joins the base of the bush or another cane, and I just cut it off. And the reason that I'm doing that is I want to have the inside of that bush completely open with no branches in the interior of the bush.
Why is that?
You want to do that so that you get good air circulation. Again, what is our big plague with these roses? It's these fungal diseases. Fungal diseases proliferate where there's bad air circulation. So if we can open up the center of that bush, we allow more air to get in there, and therefore less of an environment for those fungal diseases to proliferate. So that's the first thing I do, is I cut out all of those branches that are growing towards the center of the bush. Then I just take a look at it and I say, okay, now of the branches or canes that are left, are any of them crossing over one another? So is one growing to the left and one growing to the right and they're crossing over one another?
Kind of like making a big X.
Like a big X with your arms, right? Well, that's not good, again, because it blocks air circulation. So then you have to pick one of those branches to keep and one of those branches to cut off.
And how do you decide which one?
Doesn't matter. What I usually do is I just look at the general shape of the bush, and I see where one side has this crossing over, and I pick the branch that looks like it's growing in the best direction. And usually that would be the one that's pointing towards the outside of the bush. And then I cut off then all of the crossing branches. So now we've done all of the interior branches. First step, got rid of those. Now we've had the canes that are crossing, and we've eliminated one of them so that they aren't crossing one another. And then the third step that I do is I look for any canes that are less than a pencil thick. So those little scraggly canes that aren't as thick as a pencil, get rid of them. And I know that seems really harsh, but they are not the vigorous ones. They are not the ones who are going to give you a lot of flowers. So you just get rid of them. You cut them down to the where they join a stronger cane. So
right next to that.
Right next to the cane.
Do you cut them on any particular angle?
No, when you're cutting off a cane, you want to make the cut relatively flush to either the base of the plant or where it is growing out from another cane. You don't want to leave a stub because those stubs then die back, and that is another place where insects and disease can enter the plant. So cut it fairly flush to the main cane that you're cutting it back to. But you don't want to cut it so tight that you're digging into the main cane's flesh, right?
Right, so you don't want to leave the main cane in integrity.
Exactly. So relatively flush, don't leave a stub, but don't dig into where the main cane is growing. Then you're going to be kind of on your way to almost being done. The last thing, or second to the last thing I do in terms of cuts, is I look for any dead wood, because there will probably be some stubs or maybe even entire canes that have died off, you know, during the course of the growing season. And of course, there's no reason to leave those. Sometimes those are even pretty thick canes, you know, they've been there for a few seasons. And in that case, you may need to use a lopper, you know, a long-handled lopper, because you get more leverage on your cut. The branch might be a little too thick for just your hand pruners. And sometimes a lopper won't maybe fit into the space where you need to make that cut. It might be down in the center of the plant. And in that case, I often use a little, what's called a keyhole saw. It's just a real narrow saw that can fit into tight places. And if you don't know what that is, you can Google it or ask at a nursery if they have one.
Can you tell us a little what it looks like?
Sure. They're usually collapsible. So the blade folds into the handle. I'm doing this with my hands, of course. No one can see this on the radio. But anyway, it folds and the blade collapses into the handle. When you open it up, it has a little lock so that it keeps the blade in place. It's a sawtooth saw blade, probably about 7 inches long, and it's only probably about an inch wide, and it tapers down to, you know, a point, so which means that you can get it into tight places to make these cuts.
And those are really common and they're easy to get.
Absolutely. They all have them at any nursery or any big box hardware store. Yeah. So after you've cut out the dead wood, then the last thing that you want to do is look at all of the canes that are remaining. And if you have a ton of them, you don't need to keep like 7 to 10 canes. You don't need that many. So then you can look and see which look like they're the youngest, which is denoted by kind of a light green color, and the most vigorous growing canes. And you want to keep 5 to 7 of those is enough.
That's all. 5 to 7 for the whole plant?
For the whole plant.
And we're not going to kill the plant.
And you're not going to kill the plant. No. But you want your most vigorous ones. Now, you don't have to cut them out, but I prefer to leave only like 5 to 7 main canes, again, because I want that great air circulation.
The vigor, too.
The vigor. And so what that does to the plants is it gets rid of a lot of the plant that may have overwintering insects on it. It may have the fungal spores from last season, you know, hanging around on those branches. And so I like to have a pretty clean looking rose bush with like 5 to 7 main canes after. And some people, you know, only, I know when my mom would prune when I was a kid, because she came from back east, she would only leave like 3 to 5 canes because they had to be covered up to protect them from the freezing weather. And so the fewer she had to deal with, the easier it was for her.
You know, it may sound strange by doing that, but Tina, I see your roses and they're stunning. And it's like, whatever you're doing, I want to follow.
Oh, thanks. Well, we're not quite done yet. So after we have decided which of these canes we're keeping and we've cut out the rest, then on the canes that we're leaving, we're going to cut them down by a third. So we're going to shorten their height by 1/3 to half. I usually just do a third because they start blooming faster if you, you know, leave them a little bit longer. And the way that you want to shorten them is you want to look for a 5-leaflet leaf, 5 petals on a leaf. And you want to find a leaf that is pointing away from the plant, not towards the center of the plant, but out from the plant. And you're going to make a cut a little bit above where that leaf joins the cane. so maybe about a quarter of an inch above that leaflet. As you know, as a master gardener, the nodes where the leaves attach to the plant is where you get new growth. And so if you cut right above that node or right above that leaflet, you're going to get new growth. And that's where your new roses are going to be, is on that new growth. So you make sure that it's a leaflet that's pointing out from the plant, because then your branch, your new cane, will point out from the center of the plant. Because remember, we're trying to keep that center open.
Gotcha.
And then after you do that, you might still have a few leaves. Mostly you will have cut off a ton of the plant, right? But you might have a few leaves left on the plant. I take the time with my clippers to cut off every leaf. Again, I want to get rid of those fungal spores, and they're going to be hanging out on any growth that was on that plant. So I cut them all off, and then I take a small rake and I rake all of that stuff that has dropped on the ground, all of those leaves, pieces of branches. I rake it all up and I throw it all away. I don't compost any of my clippings from the roses. Again, I just want to be sure none of that fungal
carries on.
Exactly. So I throw all that stuff away. And then what I've done before I even started is I mixed up a dormant spray. And a dormant spray can be a horticultural oil. It can be a fungal, antifungal spray. It's called dormant because we use it when the plants are dormant, when they're not growing. Well, here's a newsflash, as you know, about California. Our plants kind of don't ever stop growing, right?
Right, right.
But by pruning our roses this way, we're kind of forcing them into a very brief dormancy. And so we want to spray them at this time, again, to get rid of as many insects and fungal spores as we can.
Question for you, Tina. Mm-hmm. Do I just go into a nursery and say, can I have a dormant spray?
Yes. You can tell them that you want a dormant spray for roses, and they will either give you a horticultural oil or they'll give you an antifungal type of spray. Neem oil is one that you can ask for that is actually both. It actually also qualifies as a, quote, organic product because it comes from an organic source, a plant source, which doesn't mean you can use it unwisely. You still have to follow, you know, very carefully the directions. But neem oil is both an oil, and the way oils work is they smother the fungal spores. So they smother them, and they also can smother any insects like scale and other overwintering insects that might be attached to the remaining canes. And so they smother them, and then the neem oil also has insecticidal properties that kill insects as well. So that's one example, but you can choose your dormant spray based on your problem. So if you have more problems with fungal diseases than insects, then you might want to use as your dormant spray a fungicide for your dormant spray. But I mix, if I don't buy one that's already mixed in a spray bottle, which if you have a few roses, buy it pre-mixed, much easier. And then you have that spray bottle right there, and you just spray your roses as you prune each one. I have a ton of roses, so I buy the concentrated dormant spray, and then I mix it up in a spray bottle.
And I just have a few roses, and that pre-mixed is just wonderful.
Absolutely. It's worth the convenience, the little extra cost. And so then after you've done that, you have broken that cycle of disease and insect infestation in your roses. And it doesn't mean you're not going to get any, but what I found is I have a lot less insect and disease infestation if I do the proper pruning and the dormant spraying.
Wonderful. That sounds great, Tina. And I know by your results it works, and your plant might look a little sad for a while, but it's actually very happy. And soon it'll be growing, and you'll have beautiful roses.
Yeah,
absolutely. A little bit work now, a lot less problems later.
And then the last thing people might be wondering is, should I feed my rose now? And the answer to that is no. You don't want to feed your rose. Remember, we're kind of forcing it into a dormancy. And so we're just going to let the rose enjoy the winter rains that we're hopefully going to get. And Then when it sends out its new leaf growth in a month or so, and that leaf growth is usually kind of reddish, you know, when it's brand new, and then it starts to turn green. Well, once it starts to turn green, then it's time to go ahead and feed your roses. But that won't be probably until the end of February or early March.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. There's some more questions we have about January gardens.
Sure.
I was wondering if you could tell us maybe about seeds.
Yeah, actually, this is the time of year. If you aren't already on some seed catalog mailing lists, try to get on them, because it's. I just love looking at seed catalogs, and they're always sent out the end of December and in January. And what I do this time of year is I start looking for what I want to grow in the spring. Because if you're going to start from seed and you want to start planting after our last frost date, which is around March 1st, you got to start those seeds the end of January so that they're ready to go in the garden.
How excited. I understand we're going to be having a show just on seeds.
Absolutely. Seed starting is not hard. It's very easy and magical, but there are some tips that will help you have success. So we're going to devote a whole show to seed starting.
So you'll have to tune in and listen to us in the next couple weeks, because we'll be talking about seeds.
Right.
Well, right now there's some vegetables growing in the garden. Can you tell us about vegetables?
Yeah, if you planted in the fall, you should have scads of greens right now, maybe some snap peas, cabbages, broccoli, cauliflower, anything in that coal crop family. So you should be getting great, great winter veggies. Your carrots, your root veggies should be starting to get ripe. You should be able to harvest carrots if you planted those back in the fall. Maybe some of your onions. Maybe they're not at the bulbing stage yet, but as green onions. So you should have tons of stuff in the garden if you started a cool season garden in the fall. If you didn't, it's not too late. You can still go to the nursery and buy six packs of lettuces, snap peas, broccoli, that sort of thing, and you can still soak seeds of carrots and beets and other root veggies. So it's still... I know it's counterintuitive to a lot of people, but January is a fabulous time to grow veggies.
I love my winter vegetable garden. I just eat out of that, and everything that you're talking about, people come over and they say, what's for dinner? And I said, go pick it. And there's nothing like broccoli that is so moist, that the stem of the broccoli, it's like you just want to eat that because it's so tender. And oh, winter vegetables are just so much fun, and they taste so yummy.
It's actually my preferred time to grow veggies because I don't like to work in the heat. And so I love my summer vegetable garden. Don't get me wrong, because, you know, who can pass up tomatoes, right? But I enjoy my time in the garden growing veggies in the winter a lot more because it's cooler and nicer.
And it's a nice variety of vegetables. I tend to eat seasonally.
Yeah.
And so whatever's growing in the garden is what I'm eating. And then by the time... the season's over, I'm kind of done eating that vegetable and ready for the next thing.
It's true. I know that, you know, by the time June rolls around, I'm like, I don't want to pick any more lettuce. What else have we got? But yeah, it's great to eat seasonally. And winter in California, we're so lucky. We have just these awesome opportunities to grow veggies in the winter.
Speaking of winter, do we have any issues with frost, or anything we need to do for frost protection?
Yeah, actually, you know, occasionally we do get frost, and you do need to be aware of that. Most of the veggies that we're growing this time of year are, you know, frost, can take a light frost, and we only get light frost here in Southern California. So your vegetable garden will be fine. I will warn you, though, do not plant your tomatoes out too early. I know sometimes I buy those seeds and I start them inside and they're ready to go in the garden. They're the right size by mid-February. And I think, oh, I'm going to jump the gun and try and get an early start. It's not worth it. Whenever I do that, I swear we get a frost, you know, within a week after I plant those tomatoes out. So
She's not excited about her tomatoes, is she?
Yeah. You know, you want them so badly when it's winter. So anyway, if you are starting things from seed, be sure that you're very careful about transitioning those seedlings outside if there's going to be frost. The other thing to be aware of is, of course, our citrus. If you have citrus in the garden, those are, you know, can be very frost sensitive. And if you know we're going to have frost, one thing that I saw someone do, which I think is so darn clever, is they kept a strand of their Christmas lights out after Christmas, the little tiny ones, you know, and they wrapped them around their citrus tree and would leave them there until the frost season was past. And whenever there was a frost, they would plug them into an extension cord and just leave those Christmas lights lit up on the tree overnight. It was just enough warmth to keep the frost from damaging the citrus.
Oh, and it brought a little cheer to the house,
yeah,
too.
How cool is that, though?
Decorations, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, consider that if you have access to power, if you can run an extension cord out to wherever your citrus tree is. Yeah.
Wow.
So I don't know, do we have much time left, or we...
Oh, we probably have about 3 minutes or so left.
Okay, let me talk about just a couple other things you might want to do in January. January is when a lot of our azaleas and camellias are in bloom. And, you know, that's a stunning thing to have in January when not much else is blooming. So if you would like to add azaleas or camellias to your garden, if you don't already have them, now's a good time to purchase them because you can see the color, you can see the shape of the flower. So consider adding those to your garden if you don't already have some. January's a great time.
Would you fertilize them when you bought them?
No. What's interesting about them is you don't fertilize them when they're blooming. You wait until they're finished blooming and then you fertilize them. That's when they put out new green growth, is after they're finished blooming. So I know that was confusing for me because I was thinking, oh, flowers, they need food. And they do need food, but wait until they are finished blooming and then fertilize them. And those plants typically want a little more acidic type fertilizer than a general fertilizer. So you can look for a fertilizer that says Camellia Azalea, or you can just look for one that says it's an acidic type of fertilizer.
You know, that's something so nice to add to your garden right now. It just, there's so many different varieties of camellias out there, and just to pick it up and perk it up, and there's colors to match what you're trying to do.
It is, and the thing I love about it is there's not a whole lot that blooms in January, right? And right. So, you know, we're kind of in the doldrums then as far as color goes. So, boy, go ahead and get those and plant them. Camellias are very long-lived plants. I don't know if you've ever driven up in Pasadena and seen some of their camellias, which are as tall as those houses. And, you know, they must like Southern California because they seem to thrive for very long periods of time in those areas. Now, our houses down here are newer, but I know I have some in my garden that are doing fabulous. Do pay attention, though. Some of them take more sun and some take shade. So when you're purchasing it, make sure that you're choosing one that is right for the exposure, the sun exposure, where you're going to plant it.
Oh, good idea.
Because I have killed several at my current home because it got way too hot for them where I planted them. So yeah, learn from our mistakes. Master gardeners kill plants just as often as everybody else.
Indeed. You know, it's amazing how much really can be done in January and how active a time of year it can be.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, we didn't talk about bare root planting because we are going to have Gary talk about that in the second half hour. But man, it's a great time to plant new things.
Yes. Yeah. Everybody stay tuned if you want to know about bare root planting, because Gary is going to be talking to us. And tell us a little bit about Gary.
Gary has been a nurseryman, I think he said third generation nurseryman, and in his family's been doing this for several generations, and they have a nursery in, used to be in Laguna Hills. It's still called Laguna Hills Nursery, but now it's in Orange, and he'll give you the address when he's on. And let me tell you, that guy knows more about fruit trees, planting those bare root, and bare root roses. So he's a guy you can go visit in person and pick his brain some more after you listen to the show.
Well, Tina, thank you so much. I think we're at the end of our time here, but I want to thank you for all the wonderful information that you've shared with us. And we hope everybody in the audience joins us in the next half hour.
Yes, absolutely. Go prune those roses.
If you have any questions about today's show, or if you have any general gardening questions that you'd like a personalized answer for, please feel free to visit our hotline and send us an email at hotline@uccemg.com. You can also visit the Master Gardener website at www.uccemg.com for lots of good information on gardening, and also a schedule of events where we'll be speaking.